Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
My pretty face standing by his side at one of these rallies, I'll be glad to show up. But they're not, they're going to be looking at him. You know, I'm going to be in Crawford with my feet up. He's going to be sitting in there behind that desk making the decisions on war and peace. And I'm thankful our party has nominated somebody plenty capable of making those decisions.
Send Fredo off to do this. Send Fredo off to do that. Let Fredo take care of some Mickey Mouse nightclub somewhere. I can handle things. I'm smart. Like everybody says, like dumb, I'm smart, and I want the steps.
Oh, the show has begun. Yeah, froze up again. Well, I didn't freeze up. What's the Savage Nation? Has Bush helped or hurt McCain with his endorsement? I mean, is this an example of who is running McCain's campaign? We know a bartender ran Giuliani's campaign right off the rails. Who in the world is running McCain's campaign? Message to Mother McCain. Mother McCain, please, I know that you listen to the show. I suspect that you do because I sound like your husband, Admiral McCain. This is what you probably heard in the House. You're probably tougher than all of the men put together. God bless the McCain family. Can you please call your son or call Cindy, your daughter-in-law, and tell him to fire his campaign manager? Because otherwise, his chance to be president is going up in smoke. He's going to go off the rails like Giuliani. What is he thinking? George Bush, perhaps one of the most unpopular presidents in recent memory, is endorsing your son for the presidency when every indicator says people want anything but George Bush or anyone like him in the White House. So you have to remind people that George Bush and John McCain are what? Wet at the... Well, what's the point of my talking? No one listens anyway. I found out something in life, whether it be... And God bless my family. I love them. But I found that at a certain point, no one listens to you. After your child's 7 or 8, yeah, Dad, I mean, basically, what do they need you for at a certain point? They don't listen to you. They figure they know more than you do. And it's the same with politicians. It's the same with everybody. No one listens to anybody. I found out nobody listens to anybody in America. That's the interesting part about individualism and individual rights. Nobody hears a word anyone else says. They pretend they hear you. They make believe they hear you. They fake listening to you if they need something from you. But fundamentally, everyone's in a monologue, which is really why I wound up in radio, because this is the perfect business for a man who has finally discovered that the world is a world of monologues. And since I have a large megaphone and I can present my monologues for 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, I found my calling. I mean, I have. It's 15 wonderful years. It's March 5th. Do you realize on March 20th it will be 15 years? And that when I started the radio, they said he won't last. He's too New York. He's too conservative. And all the people at that station on the other side of the dial here in San Francisco that said I wouldn't last a day, most of the people who stood in my way are wearing electronic bracelets. No, only one of them is wearing an electronic bracelet. The others haven't been found out yet. I'm joking. God bless him. I love them all. But he went out the door at the right time. Man, did they toss him before the downsizing. Now, of course, with a guy of that girth, downsizing takes on a special meaning. They downsized him. He actually downsized himself before they had to. But man, they saved a few hundred grand right there a year. And they could, well, I guess they could get anybody to fill that hole. I mean, it's real easy to fill that pie hole. So Clinton is back in business. I'm actually glad. I'm actually glad Clinton's back in the game. But who was it? Who was it, ladies and gentlemen, in the Savage Nation? Who was the first in the electronic media to say that it would be a Obama-Hillary-Hillary-Obama ticket? It was me. Now, others will take credit for that, but it doesn't matter. They've stolen a lot of big things from me. A lot of gigantic ideas have been stolen from me, and you know all that matters to me is that you know who stole what when and who was numero uno and primero. It's me. That's all. So who was it? It was me. I predicted a Hillary-Obama ticket on January 25th, 2007, not 08. No. I don't wear green, and I don't wear anything in between. January 25, 2007, the master of talk radio, Michael Savage, predicted the Hillary-Obama ticket. Now, it hasn't happened yet, I admit. I could still be proven to be wrong. But the fact of the matter is that it's probably going to happen, and it'll be a formidable ticket indeed. Now, with the advisors that McCain has and with the advisors that the Republican Party have in general, it's hard to imagine that McCain could win, since every day he seems to shoot himself in the foot. From going, sounding like Jackie Gleason in The Poor Soul last week when a little man from CNN said to him, "Do you think it's appropriate to mention Mr. Obama's middle name?" He goes, instead of saying, "What is that middle name, sir?" He could have trapped the CNN snide SOB into saying Hussein. I mean, why hide from your Muslim background if you're proud of it? You could say my father was a Muslim, my grandfather was a Muslim, and I'm proud to have that heritage, but I myself am a Christian. Why did he hide from it? The more he hides from it, the more it's going to stick to him, and the more it should, because I want to know where he is on the Ark of Islam, if you don't mind. There's an awful lot at stake. Now, on the positive side, I got to congratulate John McCain for his victory speech last night, because in it, he said that we have to fight Islamic extremism, which I thought was great. He finally got the message. You'd think he would, of all of them, since he's a former naval aviator. Thank God. He's actually fired 20-millimeter cannons and probably sidewired the missiles, drop bombs. He understands what warfare is. He understands how horrible it is. And he understands that it's a disaster. But it has to be done sometimes, particularly when people want to destroy your nation. I can't say that for Barack Hussein Obama. I can say it for Hillary Clinton, because after all, she did drop bombs on the Serbs. She killed, her and her husband killed over 2,000 innocent men, women, and children in Serbia. That to her credit. You know, the limber leopard is no pacifist. Let's not be mistaken about that. And the Democrat Party, until recently, has been the party of war, as you well know. They got us into most of the last few wars that we've been in prior to Iraq. So let's not underestimate them. But I'm glad she's back into the picture, because they'll hammer each other. She could expose him for the extremist he is, Obama. She could flush him out. Nobody else could do it. McCain can't do it. But for Bush to give McCain the Frito kiss on MichaelSavage.com, that's how I – did anyone get the joke of the opening? Could you play Pagliacci now? Listen, hold on. Here's what I came up with. The Bush giving McCain the Frito kiss with the feet on the desk – he says his feet are going to be in a desk in wherever, Crawford. There are people who would like to see his feet on the desk in The Hague. I hope they're wrong, but that's where they'd like to see him, not in Crawford. Amazing what you're going to get away with. The higher up you go in the food chain, the more you can get away with and never pay for it. You know what I'm saying? It's amazing to me. No wonder people want that job. You can bust a nation, steal a nation, kill people, thousands of them, and get away with it. In fact, you get a Nobel Prize. The more you kill, the bigger the Nobel Prize. But then Nobel himself was a murderer. He invented dynamite. And they say, oh, you know, won the Nobel Prize, Al Gore. Yeah, the dynamite prize. Hello. In fact, Alfred Nobel, who gave by proxy the award to Al Gorleone, who, by the way, no one can find him since it started snowing this late in the year. Al Gore, have you noticed, has been invisible for months. Nobody could find him. Why? Because someone's liable to say, hey, Al, could you please try to make your theory coordinate with the weather we're having. Where is Al Gore? You'll find Waldo. Nobody knows. That's why I say the higher up you go, the more you can get away with. And in fact, the bigger the lie, in fact, the more you tell a lie, and more frequently you tell a lie, the more it becomes the truth. And that was taught to the world by Goebbels, who worked for Herr Hitler in Germany. Now play Pagliacci, and I'll tell you why in a minute. Again, the wrong button. Right over their head, zing. It's the clown, okay? It's heartbreaking, this song. It'll rip your guts out if you have a brain and guts. America's on a colostomy bag. How can they feel anything? Turn it off. It's way over their head. I can feel it. I could see by what's going on in corporate America who they're putting into radio. Every week they try another comedian. They tried, what's her name, Whoopi Cushion Goldberg. I said, are they crazy? How could anyone listen to this? Boom, gone. Then they tried a guy who was O'Reilly's sock puppet every other day on the Murdoch channel. I knew he wouldn't last. How could a show like that last? Every day he's talking. What? What are you flashing red for already? I just got started. I'm warming up here. Don't cut me off already for another ad. I'm glad that we have ads, okay, that care didn't kill the show. Thank God. But give me a second to develop an idea. I haven't even started yet. I had an espresso. I had pineapple circles. I avoided the tofutti today. I had the pineapple circles, and I got super energy now. I got the fructose rather than the sucrose, working with the caffeine. I'm building up. I'm coming up to a crescendo, and right away they flash me red, go to a break. It's like Thoughtus Interruptus, man. Give me a break here. Give me another 3 minutes now. I got distracted. So they put a guy on O'Reilly's sock puppet. Every day the guy's talking to another old actor. It started to sound like Jack Benny talking to somebody else about their operation on the boardwalk in Coney Island with their pants legs rolled up to their knees, getting sun on the long bones on their shins. So the operation went well. No, it was like the Friars Club. It was pathetic. He sounds like a nice guy, but it was hurtful. It was painful. Now they put a guy on from CNN, and he's interviewing people from CNN on conservative stations. Who is in charge of these things? Doesn't anyone understand what talk radio is about? If you have a conservative station, you got to have conservatives on it. If you have a liberal station, have liberals on it. You can't mix and match. People want an identity with a station. And, you know, you want to try the liberal stations, keep trying it because they don't work. They never have and they never will. Why don't they work? A, there's no talent. And B, they can get it on ABC, CBS, NBC, and half of Fox News all day long. They don't need it. They get it in the newspapers. They get it on ABC, CBS, NBC, and half of Fox News all day long. They turn to talk radio for one thing, conservative talk opinion. That's what they want to hear. They want to hear how they're thinking. What do I have to do? Teach everybody in the business what the business is about? Well, I'm open-minded. Prove me wrong. Thus far, I haven't been proven wrong about anything. I'll be back.
Savage.
I'm Michael Savage. I'm in the private sector. I've survived in the private sector for my whole life. I was a consultant. I was a writer. And now I've been in radio, and I've done very well. Now, you would think that McCain, who is every day telling us he's not qualified for the position, today he comes up with another doozy. He says he never thought he was fated to be president. My God, John, please stop sharing so much with us. We don't want to know it. Again, Mrs. McCain, can you please call your son and tell him to get a new advisor? And B, to stop sharing everything from his heart, because he's not me. That's number one. And number two, you want to win the presidency? There's only one way John McCain wins. He goes to a button-down set of speeches on strict issues. Number one, he continues to talk about his war record, which is real. He talks about being tortured because America doesn't want to forget what he paid for for being a citizen, more than 99.9% of us. Okay, and let's not forget it. Obama didn't serve in the military, neither did Hillary. We want someone who did. And he's one of the few who was there, flew jets. Show us pictures of yourself flying jets. Never mind the whack job old fruits in the Democrat Party who are anti-war. They're a bunch of old Bolsheviks who don't matter anyway. John, they're never going to vote for you. Stop trying to get the crossover vote. Okay, stop with the metrosexual voting. They're all you care about. You see these stupid advisors. Try to get the other side. You don't have your base locked up. What are you worried about the other side, John? You want to win? It's got to be either McCain-Romney or you want the winning ticket. You heard it first in the Savage Nation. Tell me you ever heard this before, what you're about to hear. I predicted the Hillary-Obama ticket first, which I'm going to play in a minute. Here's one now. McCain / Powell, that's the end of the race. Close it up. They win by 35 points. Then you have two men, two races, both war heroes. End of story. It's over. McCain, Colin Powell, boom, over. Now, you'll read this immediately on the blogs like they came up with it or tomorrow. Now, I'm going to show you how prescient I am. What I'm about to play for you is only 55 seconds long. January 25th, 2007, not 2008. Listen to this.
So why does the media continue to position Obama as the front runner? Here's Michael Savage's analysis. The liberal media is pushing Obama knowing he can't win. They're pushing Obama so that he becomes the target of critics instead of Hillary. Obama gets the attention. Obama generates buzz. And all the while, Hillary flies along under the radar. Then after all of the conservative and other critics have spent all of their ammo to take down Obama, such as his years in a madrasas as a Muslim student in Indonesia, which he will not reply about, Obama then falls out of the race. But he comes back in a year as the VP candidate on Hillary's ticket. So you'll have a Hillary candidacy with Obama as a vice presidential candidate, which will be a liberal juggernaut that will win in the absence of any real conservative opposition.
Okay, I was partly right and partly wrong, but even the greats in predicting are not 100% right. But I sensed that a long time ago. But I went further in another day, and here's what I actually said. Who is Obama? Where did he come from? He was actually an invention, or let's say a creation, like a Frankenstein, of the Clinton camp. And he turned on them. That would be my suspicion. He didn't come out of nowhere. A man does not rise from nowhere without the powerful forces that are behind everything, who will pull the strings, bringing him to this point. So it was the Clinton camp who said, let's bring up this guy. Let's put him forward. He has absolutely no track record. Nobody ever heard of him. We will convince the American people that he's qualified to be the president based upon media hysteria and propaganda. And then, of course, when we start to see him slip in the polls, which is inevitable after they start to hammer him over the next few months, we'll say, well, he could have been president. He's a great guy, and so many of you love him that we're going to take him in as the vice president. And then, of course, they recapture the entire Democrat Party and a lot of the independents, and, of course, 99% of the African-American vote, who are continuing to vote along racial lines, along no other lines. All about race over there. Sorry to tell you. Another embarrassing thing for me to tell you, but it's true. And it's kind of sad to tell you that, but it's true. All racial. So it wouldn't matter what the person of African-American heritage said. All that would matter is that he'd be African-American to get 99% of the African-American vote. That's a reality. You can challenge me on it. I'll prove it to you going back to Joe Louis. I saw a program about Joe Louis on HBO that was so revealing. It was shocking. I'll be back. Be here.
Savage.
Eddie, my love, I love you so. I want it for you. You'll never know.
One of my favorite songs. I mean, I don't play it. I like hearing it, you know. Why? Why do I like hearing it? Why does anyone like hearing old music? It's the good old days that were never good. They were just old. But it does bring back each song from that era. I know it marks me in time. I understand that. I should play something more current. But I hate current music. That's all. I'm sorry, I'm stuck. In classical, I really didn't go past Beethoven. I got stuck with Beethoven. Will you turn that off already? They can't listen. They can't. Here's the thing about conservatives. They're smart, but they can't multitask very well. Liberals are very good at multitasking because they're scatterbrains. And that's why they're liberals. They can't focus that well. No, truthfully, they can't. They think they know everything, but they're all over the map. But, Eddie, my love, I'm thinking, you know what's really in my mind? It's not Hillary, Schmillery, Dillery, Billery. It's going to work itself out. I already told Mrs. McCain what to do, to call John in, you know, to the woodshed and tell him to fire his campaign manager and start listening to me. I can get this guy elected. I don't care what you have to do. Call Colin Powell. I give him $20 million. Let him run and then quit. I don't care what. Let him run and then quit the day later after he's vice president. Tell him he decided to quit anyway. Give him $20 bucks and goodbye. I mean, but you could wipe the floor up with the Obama-Hillary thing. Over. Now, let's move on here. What's really on my mind is this. My birthday is March 31st. And I'm pondering whether to have another party or not. And it brings up a question that's not political, which is a lot of people have mixed feelings on this. Do you mark your birthday with parties as a grown-up? Who goes to a party? What's a party anyway? It's for children with hats, balloons, and bad cake and migraines the next day. I haven't been to a party in I don't know how many decades. Party. I don't even know what a party is. But let's say you do. You're a party. They call it a cocktail party, whatever. I don't know what they call it even. I'm not like a herd person. But anyway, the point is, last year, March 31st, I had a party. for 70 friends at a home I own. I had it catered. It was really very good. The food was good, but I don't want to do it again. It's too much work. So I have another thing lined up where I rent a restaurant that's closed on Sunday. I get a polka band. The doors are closed, and I just bring in like 70 to 100 friends. And no tickets, and I'm not selling any. Or not do it at all. Why do I have to mark another dark year? Why? Another year toward the grave? This is what a lot of grown-ups tell me. What do you even mark the birthday for? If you're over 40, do you mark your birthday? Because I'm 41. I'm like Jack Ben. No, really. Do you mark your birthdays anymore as an older person or what? A lot of people do, some don't. I'm still a kid inside. I like a party. But then I have a miserable time usually. You see me in pictures after? My head is crunched up like I have a migraine headache the entire party. This goes all the way back in time. I always talk my mother into a party. Poor woman, God rest her soul. She'd put a party on for me in Queens in that little house. I don't know how she did it, a little attached 20-foot-wide house. What she could do in that house with four burners, I still don't know how she did it with an electric stove. You know, I've said this before. You go into these chefs come out of these schools, the cool California Culinary Academy, and this academy, a Wolf Range with enough BTUs to literally set off a small rocket to a near planet. I never saw anything. They turn it on and go, woof, you hear the flame go on. You know what they cook? I wouldn't feed it to the dog. It needs a bed of this and of this and under the bed, and like a textured. The texture must be deep, and you put the pork chop on top of the textured bottom, and then on top you put a sauce that can give somebody a heart attack and diabetes at once, and on top of that you put something so horrible that people puke the minute you bring it out to the table, and you charge them $97.50, and they come back for more. My mother would cook on the four burners. I never saw any, and she could put out dishes. Everything was hot at the same time. But no matter how many people were in the house, so she put on a party for me, as I was saying, in that little house. And I never forget the last party she put on for me. I was nine. She got me it was a Halloween party. Now I remember. And I said, Ma, I want to be a devil. She said, that should be easy. So she bought me a devil costume. And in those days, there was a rubber mask. I can still, to this day, actually, I think my allergies began. I should sue the company. I think that rubber mask was so toxic. It wasn't even made in China. I think it was like the leftovers from the Goodyear plant. I don't know. They made bad tires, like second tires. The neoprene was so toxic that they had to give it away. And some shyster probably in Brooklyn bought the bad neoprene and made masks for children, thereby destroying an entire generation. So I had this red mask. It really looked like a devil. It scared me in the bedroom. I put it on. And all those in my eyes and like the horns, the mouth, you could see the mouth to the rubber and the eyes slits. It stank inside that mask like you were in a gas chamber. So I wore it the whole night. It probably did something bad to me. I'm pretty sure like the foot inside the Buster Brown shoe machine, the x-ray machine gave me cancer of the foot, God forbid. Because if I was in the shoe store and my sibling was getting shoes, I must have hit the machine 100 times on the foot. God knows how many doses of x-rays I put into that foot. Because, you know, you're a kid, 5, 6, 7, and you could see the bones in your foot. That was a great marketing trick. Cancer for galore. They didn't really. But you put your foot in the shoe, and oh, how your foot. It was great marketing. Look at your foot inside the shoe. You could see the skeleton moving, and you know whether the shoe. Great marketing. But they didn't know cancer, nothing. How did they know? They probably didn't, honestly. But the point I'm making is I put that mask on. And I had the party. Mother, God bless her, cooked and everything with the candy corn because she bought and cooked. Imagine who would cook for a kid's party. Even then, no one ate it, to be honest with you. Kids didn't come. And what happened? I got smacked by a girl named Maxine. If she's listening to the show, I remember why. It was Halloween, and I grabbed her in a closet. I gave her a kiss. I ripped up the mask off my face, and I kissed her on the lips. She hauled off with a hand. She gave me a crack in it's the right ear. To this day, it's ringing. She hit me with the left hand in the right ear. She's probably the head of one of the meanest feminist groups in New York City today. She could be Bella Abzug's, cohort, or let's say the other one who said that McCain's years suffering in a prison camp didn't matter. What was that other one? That sourpuss rat, former stripper hooker. I don't even want to hear her name. What a crack she gave me. To this day, the head is ringing. The point I'm making is that I don't know whether to have a party or not. And it's going all the way back in memories. Now, I want to show you what I just did here. What I just did here was start a thought, weave it out, go for 5 minutes and come back to the original idea, not having forgotten what I started. That's what you call performance art. It's impossible to do unless you, A, don't smoke marijuana, which I don't, B, don't use drugs, C, only occasionally have a drink, and D, exercise like a fighter every day to keep in training, because this is the toughest business there is for a person with a mind. There's nothing harder if you do it right. Oh, yeah, anyone could do it wrong. All you got to do is interview old friends and sit and talk like you're on the Atlantic City boardwalk with hot sun on your shins. Or you know, interview people from CNN every 5 minutes and think anyone's going to listen to that after 6 seconds. That's like death radio. This is talk radio because it's a combination of education, passion, and mission. Brains, education, mission, passion. And, of course, you have to build the audience in order to be able to do it. Otherwise, no one knows what you're talking about. So should I have a party, yes or no, is the question. Number two, did Bush hurt or help McCain? Now, do me a favor, entertain me now with the Fredo piece, because it makes me laugh no matter how many times you play it now.
Send Fredo off to do this, send Fredo off to do that. Let Fredo take care of some Mickey Mouse nightclub somewhere. I can handle things, I'm smart. Not like everybody says. Like, dumb, I'm smart, and I want the steps.
Why does that make me laugh? And who, by the way, is Fredo? Is it McCain or Bush? That's the interesting part. It's hard to tell, actually. It's hard to tell. I mean, you want to believe McCain can pick up the mantle and I don't know. Oh, my God, I don't know. In my heart of hearts, I have a feeling that Hillary's tougher than McCain. In other words, if I put them if I put McCain and Hillary in a room, I know who'd come out alive. And it wouldn't be John McCain. No, I'm sorry to tell you that. If I put the two of them alone in a room for 4 or 5 hours, 4 or 5 minutes, excuse me, and each of them had a telephone in their hand, I know who would who would win. That's the terrible thing here. I don't know if that's enough. I don't know what to do here. Go with my gut or my brain here. It's a tough one. Why am I laughing? Because A, I had too much caffeine and fructose, and B, I can. I'm having a good day. This is terrifying. Let's see what's wrong. No allergies, no migraines, no indigestion, no back pain. Nothing's wrong. What's wrong with today? What a day it's out. It's so gorgeous. My God. See, we get the weather first. You know that I told you last week you get a hit this week, which you did. We have a day today, one of those days you want to reach out and touch the sky. It's so gorgeous right now in San Francisco. The bay is flat like a mirror, and the water takes on a certain color this time of year, like a China blue that can make you cry. It can almost make you weep because you realize God is the greatest artist in the history of the world. There's no one ever come. You know, artists have cried trying to touch what God has created. That's why they were great artists. I can guarantee you the great artists were probably the most spiritual people on earth because they were trying to say thank you to God. What do you think they'd spend a year making a painting for? They're trying to say to God, I thank you for creating this beauty. Okay, that's what I'm doing here. I'm trying to say thank you. It's a worship. The artist was worshiping through the paint or through the marble that he was sculpting. Do you understand that or you can't comprehend? Okay, you're from the school of smearing feces on a cross, and you assume that's art. I understand. Most of you are so brain dead, you have no idea what art is. But you're listening to a man who understands classical art because I grew up in it, and I can talk art with anybody. I don't mean technical details. I'm sure you could beat me on that because you took Art 109. But in terms of the greatness of art, nobody can outdo the next man if he truly understands what art is. You understand that? Whether it's in a plate of veal parmesan or in a Michelangelo. You understand that or not? You get it or not? You sure you do? I do. Now what I want you to play for me, because I need entertainment today, is that since I said touch the sky, that if they really understood my soul, they would have immediately gotten Jimi Hendrix with his great tune, Touch the Sky. Wasn't it Touch the Sky, Beowulf? Isn't that the name of the song? You know, God, Kiss the Sky. Very close. Do we have Kiss? They'll kiss this guy because they're going before the Supreme Court. We have Kiss This Guy, Purple Haze. Play Kiss This Guy, Purple Haze. Go ahead. Don't play Piss This Guy. Play Kiss This Guy. Come on, louder, man. I feel like doing Tai Chi on a mountaintop right now. I feel like doing a martial art on a mountaintop. I feel so good. I feel like breaking a log. Don't you feel great, man? Don't you feel that energy? Because I feel good, you feel good. When I feel bad, you feel bad. Hi. All right, Jimmy, thank you. Now, here's the thing. Guys' hair is becoming longer again. I don't know if you know that. The trends are changing again. If you go to, you got to see, it comes out of L.A. All the styles come out of L.A., obviously, because the young actors are there. So now they've gone from the short buzz cut. That was in for a while. Mainly the older guys who were partially bald found out that if you trim your hair close, the baldness doesn't show as much as if you leave it longer and the bald shows. The barbers were smart. They said cut it close and the bald is gone. That looked good. Now all of a sudden you see guys with sideburns and long hair again. What's happening is America's moving back almost to a hippie-like mentality, hippie-like phase. That's what the ascent of the Democrats, liberalism, and the long hair. It's all coming back. So I'm thinking, a part of me wants to turn the clock back. I'm thinking of turning it back to the late 60s, early 70s of my life. I'm actually thinking of getting a place in Hawaii now. Now I'm going the other way. I almost feel like going back to Hawaii, living there for a while, doing a show out of Hawaii. I mean, it's a pipe dream. You understand that. The main reason I won't do it is they don't let me bring the dog in, so that's over. I mean, they still have the quarantine. I'm not going to bring – I'm not going anywhere without Teddy, so that's over with. But it's a nice idea, isn't it? Like, imagine, build a studio, house on the near the water, get up. It's earlier out there. Do the show. I could do the show from anywhere. It doesn't matter where I am. It's all in my head anyway. What do you think? I need to interview executives from the corporation? That's not my – I don't need guests. Guests can be virtual. You get them on the air. Everybody who wants to be on is on anyway. You know, anyway, the point I'm making is, what do I have to live anywhere? It doesn't matter where I live. So I'm thinking that I could go there, okay, for like a week, see if I could like do it again. I already lived there, and I had already the island fever thing. It does, after a while, Honolulu can get to you. God bless. You can't live there after. I mean, unless you have to. It's a hard place to live. It's tough because it's like H1 freeway. Everyone has four cars, and they eat in like Tubby Boys. And they curse the Howley, even though they drive the big car, you know. The Howley made everything, but they hate that. It's a hard place to be because of the racism against white people. I'll be right back.
Savage.
There must be some kind of way out of here. Say the Joker to the thief. There's too much confusion. I can't get
oh, bring
no
back
relief.
The hippie era, will you please? Coming anyway. Doesn't matter whether you want it. Get out the tie-dye. Get out the patchouli oil. Throw away the razors. Get out the sandals. Throw away the underwear. Burn your brassieres. Old people acting like young. Oh, horrible. Ooh, nothing worse. Yuck. I want to get old. No one wants to get old. Do you blame anybody? Who wants to get old? It's not pleasant. I don't know, I'm lucky so far. Lucky what happens to people. God. See the things. You see that thing about colon cancer, the new thing? Turn that off. You see the new article about colon cancer? I meant to talk about it. It's like, okay, I never did go and get the colonoscopy. The idea of a pipe in my behind, I'm sorry, I couldn't. Here's the thing you hide your whole life. Okay, your private part. Your whole life you hide it from the world. From childhood on, the first thing you do when you have consciousness is cover up your tush, right? Mm-hmm. Even if you, let's say, are hetero and you engage, you know, normal acting, you generally keep that as a man. That's yours, right? No. Now, you're supposed to suspend an entire lifetime of natural shyness and natural like dignity. And lay down on a table and let strangers put a camera right into that part of your body and talk to you. So I understand that it's the most preventable of all cancers. It's the number two killer amongst cancers. So, you know, rationally, you know you're supposed to let them stick a camera up your and go explore. Now a new article comes. But I set out to do it last year. I had it all set up. They gave me the stuff to take, the appointment. I canceled it four times. I found one excuse after another. I kept injuring myself in a minor way so I wouldn't go in. I just kept resisting and resisting. Then finally, I said, the heck with it. It's almost worse. Now I read today, new study based on Japanese scientists who've noticed it a number of years ago, that there's a thing called flat polyps, flat lesions rather, that unless they're the most skilled of practitioners, they have missed them. So what they've done here is open up like a revisit. All the millions of people who've gone in for the camera job in their butt are now going to have to go back to make sure that they didn't miss the little flat lesions, which most of the people in the business, they say, would have missed. You hear this? It's unbelievable to me. I don't know whether it's a marketing gimmick to get people back in already that went through the mill and they didn't back. Oh, yeah, well, we missed it. I come back in another $700, you know, another procedure. I don't know whether it's that or it's true. But when you read that it's the number, I'm not going to talk to you about colon cancer much beyond this. It's a horrible topic. But I have to get it because my mother, God rest her, I don't want to go down that road. Oh, God, what a way to die. Oh, what a way to die. I eat a lot of onions and a lot of garlic. I get a lot of roughage. But no, I do eat a lot of garlic. And I'm on like 1 to 3 grams of vitamin C for the last 35 years. Hello. I wrote the books on this. 1 to 3 grams. That's the average if I'm not sick. If I'm sick, maybe 10 to 20. I know it hasn't been confirmed by the AMA. All right, fine. Great. Yeah, get back to me on that in 10 years when most of them are underground, the AMA, you know. But what am I talking about here? Where am I get distracted? Because I don't want to talk about McCain anymore. What a topic. Do you see where I've gone to not have to talk about Hillary Clinton and McCain? Do you see the lengths to which I will go to avoid to avoid talking about it one more second? I cannot believe it, but the next primary is Pennsylvania, April 22nd. So you'd think they'd shut up? But no, their ratings were so jumbo, I mean, compared to, you know, what they normally get. No matter how big their ratings are, it's nothing compared to radio. You don't know that. Cable television's ratings, although they're big comparatively to what they were, I'm talking in a strange way, they're like nothing compared to talk radio. We have humongous numbers. So I can't pay too much attention to what the Lilliputians do. You understand that? And they haven't stopped. Like, Obama, well, we analyzed it. And when you come on in, Mr. Rasmussen, who got everything wrong until now, including this one, what do you think is going to happen tomorrow? Well, our predictions were not quite accurate, but I can tell you that they're going to be accurate from here on in because here's what we've analyzed after the election in the exit polls. We found out that they shifted according to the stars. And although they were lined up in the Obama, according to our polls yesterday, we have found there's been a subtle shift inside the interterrestrial space of the axis of the voter who has subtly moved over to the Hillary Clinton camp, and we are certain that this indicates a change according to the Rasmussen poll. And that's why we'll continue to harass you with it on Fox News.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Pretty face standing by his side at one of these rallies, I'll be glad to show up. But they're not, they're going to be looking at him. You know, I'm going to be in Crawford with my feet up. He's going to be sitting in there behind that desk making the decisions on war and peace. And I'm thankful our party has nominated somebody plenty capable of making those decisions.
I'm proud to be an Okie from Muskogee.
Yeehaw.
Place where even
just what the doctor ordered, the kiss of death. Real smart move, John. Great advice. Wait, I hold it. Stop the music. I have a better idea for John McCain. Not only can he could top that one. Wait a minute. He could top that one. He could go to prison, and he could find one of the Republicans in prison for getting kickbacks, and he can have them endorse him. Wait a minute. Just dawned on me. Say that although the liberals put him in jail, I still love him. That would even be better. You go to Duke Cunningham, who I still are 8 years for the slam. Ask Duke, maybe he can endorse you from the slam or somewhere federal prison. John, damn, I didn't think of that. John, that's smart. Who else can you pick in the Republican Party? Let's see who else has been disgraced. Go down the line. Anyone in the Republican Party that people have tossed out, you go to. Wait a minute. The contributor to Fox News that even Bush got rid of. What was his name? The guy who advised Bush, they called him the whiz kid, the Bush's brain. Karl Rove, have Karl Rove endorse you. He's an attractive fellow. That's perfect, John. appear on stage with everybody except those who could actually get you elected. I'll tell you. But on the other side, we have Michelle Obama. Now, we got to talk about Michelle Obama. I don't know about you. I'll take Cindy McCain as first lady. Now, why do I say that? Is it a racial statement? No. Cindy McCain is a class act. Michelle Obama is a nightmare. Probably one of the meanest women to have ever entered the political arena. And be happy to show her meanness is this Michelle Obama. Now, why do I say that? Am I mean-spirited? Well, I'll let you decide who's mean-spirited, me or Michelle Obama. We linked it up on michaelsavage.com, top left, and it's from Newsbusters. And it says, as Newsbusters previously reported, the wife of Democrat presidential candidate Barack Obama isn't very proud of her country. 2 weeks after making her disdain for the nation clear during a campaign speech for her husband in Wisconsin, Michelle Obama further debased America by saying that we're a country that is, quote, just downright mean, unquote. Given how media made excuses for her comments in Wisconsin, it'll be quite interesting to see how just much of her interview in the March 10th edition of The New Yorker will be reported in the next 24 hours. Of course, the answer is it won't be reported, but I'm going to read it to you anyway. I'm going to report on it. Mrs. Obama begins with a broad assessment of life in America in 2008, quote, and life is not good. We're a divided country. We're a country that is, quote, just downright mean. We are, quote, guided by fear. We're a nation of cynics, sloths, and complacents. We have become a nation of struggling folks who are barely making it every day. And, of course, the heads bobbed up and down in the peanut gallery. Folks are just jammed up, and it's gotten worse over my lifetime. And doggone it, I'm young, 44. Now, listen to this woman. This is Michelle Obama. Listen to what she says now about her and her husband. You're looking at a young couple that's just a few years out of debt, said Michelle Obama. See, because we went to those good schools and we didn't have trust funds. I'm still waiting for Barack's trust fund, especially after I heard that Dick Cheney was supposed to be a relative or something. Give us something here. Give us something here? Wow. Give us something here? As a result of his book, in 2005, their income was $1.67 million. Which is more than they had earned in the previous 7 years. Just after Barack Hussein Obama was elected to the United States Senate, Michelle Obama received a large pay increase from $121,000 in 04 to $316,000 in 05. You think somebody gave her something for nothing? You want something else for nothing, Michelle? We'll give you the rest of this for nothing. You want any of the rest of the hypocrisy from this woman? Here it is. Quote, the life that I'm talking about that most people are living has gotten progressively worse since I was a little girl. So if you want to pretend like there was some point over the last couple of decades when your lives were easy, I want to meet you. You hear this? Now, according to The New Yorker, life was really not that hard for Michelle Obama, even though she's playing the sharecropper's daughter. Money, apparently, was scarce but sufficient. Her father, Fraser, took pride in providing for his family. Quote, if the TV broke and we didn't have any money to have it fixed, we could go out and buy another one on our charge card as long as we paid the bills on time, quote, unquote, Marion, her mother, told me. Saturday nights were spent at home playing Chinese checkers, Monopoly, or a game called Hands Down. It was a simple time. I probably had two sleepovers in my entire life, Craig, her brother said. We were home folks. Many years, the family drove to Duke's Happy Holiday Resort in Michigan for a week's vacation. So she's complaining about that idyllic life. Now, let's compare that to Michelle Obama's miserable life today. You see, Michelle employs a full-time housekeeper, and Michelle tries to see a personal trainer four times a week. I guess that's a stress for her. Now, let's go a little bit further into her life and see how hard it is. Or would you like me to stop right here? Would you like me to go on? Because the fact of the matter is, she's a hypocrite. A hypocrite. I had it much harder than Michelle Obama. You don't hear me complaining about it. My life was put on hold because of affirmative action. My birthright was stolen because of affirmative action. They told me white boys need not apply because of affirmative action. They stole jobs and scholarships from me because of affirmative action. How many millions of white males out there are more qualified to be promoted as a policeman or a highway patrolman or as a fireman? And are not being promoted because of affirmative action. How many? Millions of white men are being shafted every day because of affirmative action. Maybe they ought to riot. Maybe they ought to go out by the millions and say, we're not taking it anymore. It's racism and it's illegal. So, you know, Michelle, you want to stir up some feelings of meanness? You're doing a very good job by lying about it. You're a hypocrite. And you'd make not a good first lady, Michelle Obama, But as I say on MichaelSavage.com, she'd make a great last lady. I'm Michael Savage, and I approve of this monologue. 1-800-449-8255. WOR, New York City. Pete, you're first up. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi, Michael. Carry on about Michelle Obama. She's an ungrateful anti-American blasphemer. It's truly troubling that she keeps house with Barack Obama there. But you were saying about him, about blacks throwing in their vote for him wholesale, and I agree with you that they will, but he's casting himself, of course, as a middle-of-the-road Democrat. He's not an Al Sharpton or a Jesse Jackson or a Louis Farrakhan. He's trying to, underneath perhaps he is, but he's trying to cast himself as he's a black.
But, Pete, if God forbid Obama did become the president, who do you think would do the invocation at the inauguration? It would be his pastor, wouldn't it, from the separatist black church? The pastor who thinks Israel shouldn't exist, the man who gave Louis Farrakhan an award, is that the man we want in the giving the invocation?
I hope that day never comes to pass to begin with, Michael. Believe me, I want to see Savage Buchanan in 08 on the Independence
Day. Yeah. Well, I'm too smart to have kissed the babies. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
And believe me, I'll let it go with that. We'll leave it on the entertaining note. You were going to talk about the Joe Louis special on HBO, were you not?
You know what, Michael? I'm not familiar with the special. I just wanted to remark that it kind of cuts both ways because you were at the Hatton-Mayweather fight, and I got to say, I, like probably so many white people, was pulling for Ricky Hatton, and I believe, is Mayweather an American? If I see a Russian guy fighting a black guy from America, I got to say that I'm chauvinistically pulling for the Russian guy to win.
You mean because of the race?
Because of the race.
So you're saying that blacks who said all they cared about was Joe Louis beating the white boy, and that's an exact quote from Maya Angelou, the former prostitute who was the revered poetess who invented her name, Maya Angelou. She was interviewed in that special and said, "We were so proud when he knocked that white boy, Braddock, to the ground. All we knew was that white boy was down on the mat, and we were so happy."
Yeah.
That's a nice thing to run in a special, isn't it, Pete? When you see what's in the heart of the radical left, that the white boy is on the ground? Thanks for the call. No, that's all I wanted to say about that. Honolulu, Megan, you're on the Savage Nation topic, please.
Yes, you need to bring Teddy because the quarantine rules have changed.
Well, hold on. Let me tell the audience what you're talking about. In the last hour, I was pondering becoming a hippie and moving to Hawaii, but I said I can't go because of Teddy. Because when I lived there a million years ago, it was like a 6-month quarantine, so nobody brought in dogs. What's the quarantine today?
Well, it's still 120 days, but they have a new program. It's called 5 days or less, and you can actually ride on the plane with your dog and pick them up at the airport as soon as you get here.
Wait a minute. I don't understand. So what's the quarantine?
Well, the quarantine is for people that don't want to jump through the crazy hoops that they create for you to actually pick the dog up as soon as you arrive at the airport. You have...
What do you mean? If I fly the dog in with me, he comes right home with me?
Yes. If you follow the regulations that you can print out online when you go to the Hawaii State website and you click on the quarantine.
Oh, well, I know. That makes a big difference to me. If I could bring Teddy, I'm going.
And it's cheaper. Definitely.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't put him in quarantine. That's a great impediment. I lost a dog when I lived there. It was killed by a frog, a bufo. He ate one and died. I was away on vacation. I left him with people. I came back. He was dead. What happened? He ate a frog and died. You know, they're very toxic. I don't have to tell you that.
Yes, they are. They're awful. My dog licked one, but he survived.
Mine was a little, what was he? God, I forget what, kind. He was a little great guy. I brought him all the way out from New York. I was gone for like a week and boom, dead. I buried him. I know where he's buried. I know exactly where he's buried. He's still there. He's in the ground in Hawaii in the back of Manoa Valley. He's really beautiful. Beautiful, serene spot. But what did he... It was a bufo, and I know the bufo toxin is really, really a whacked-out, powerful toxin. What kind of dog was he? Wasn't like a shelter. I can forget the kind of dog already. Anyway, little guy... What are these? It's like English dogs. It's one. One is. Do you know what I'm talking about here? There's like two little English dogs, and one looks like the other type of breed, but they're two different names. Does anyone know what I'm talking about? Bail me out here. The kind of dog I'm talking about. I don't even remember the kind of dog I had. The show's just slipping. slippery. I always dream that I have like a farm on a mountain and I have all my dogs buried there with little like headstones going way back to Tippy. But he's in a garbage. He's already compost in the Far Rockaway when they threw him in the truck. I didn't have a chance. Who knew about a gravestone for a dog in those days? The dog dropped dead from the food in the house at 9. He had a heart attack at 8. The men died young, so did the dogs from eating the same diet. The women knocked them all off so they'd inherit the house and move to Florida. It wasn't exactly like in their head, but it was subconscious. Eat the brisket. It's good for you. Go ahead. Can I have some greens? Don't be stupid. What do you want rabbit food for? We don't give greens in this house. More meat. Why is it so fatty? It's delicious. Eat the fat. In fact, you should eat only the fat. Don't even eat the muscle of the meat. Eat the fat part. Eat it. Don't eat green. Nah, you don't want a salad. That's for rabbits. The men were dead in their late 40s, early 50s. The dogs died between 6 and 9 when it was unusual because of the scraps and kennel ration, I believe. But I have no gravestone for Tippy. First of all, he bit me down to the bone. The white showed. But in a way, I got what I deserved. I was with the bone. I told that story too many times to repeat it. Now, the other dog that died, I had another one killed in front of me. To this day, I feel that I did something wrong. And it's like that English dog that I'm talking about. That was the first one I had. God, why can't someone help me with this? A teeny little English dog that looks like a schnauzer type. Then there's another one. It's a Dickie or Yucky. I don't remember. This one in New York I had. I'm walking it in Forest Hills on Austin Street, and a Dalmatian got off a leash. That dog, I hate it to this day, that breed. I hate them. That firehouse dog, it leapt on my dog. It was a little dog. It weighed about a pound, and it bit it right across the back. Its teeth punctured the lungs of my dog. By the time I reached down, it was dead in my hand. What are you going to do? You're going to shoot the other dog? What can you do? I remember rushing with a friend over the 59th Street Bridge, and we got it into the pet hospital. Died. It was dead already. They sent me a bill for $500 anyway. Look, it's the way it is, America. What are you going to do? Nothing's for free. You want free medical care? Go to Cuba. You go to Cuba, they give you a nice dirty smock and then no medication on the shelf. And they got to fly a doctor in from Spain when you really get sick. Because their doctors were playing dominoes over by the 57 Buick on the hood. I'll be back. Savage.
We don't smoke marijuana in Muskogee. We don't take our trips on LSD.
We don't burn our draft cards down on Main Street. We like living right
and being free.
Right, not living left. Yahoo.
We don't make a party out of loving.
We like holding hands
and pitching woo.
What's pitching woo? Some George Bush would know.
We don't let our hair grow long and shaggy.
Like the hippies out
in San Francisco.
Here comes. Sing along.
Be an Okie from Muskogee.
Where is Muskogee? Muskogee.
A place where even square.
That was a great song in its day. All right, turn it off already. But where is Muskogee? What? Oklahoma. Wow. They have like one electoral vote, I think. Oklahoma. 1-800-449-8255. What was I talking about? I have a headache now. I had 87 good minutes today. I was flying high. I was sailing along. You know what? I made a mistake. I went into the radio kitchen. I'm too sensitive. I got to admit it. I'm like a tuning fork. I was perfect. I had titrated just the right amount of fructose from the pineapple and just the right amount of caffeine. I had titrated everything perfectly. I'm like a chemistry set. What did I make a mistake? I got a salt, jag going. So first I ate pretzels from the refrigerator. That was, all right, nothing. Then I ate rancid Spanish peanuts. My right decided, it's like fusel oils must have developed in the nut. Whatever develops in a bad peanut, Spanish peanut, I got because the right side of my head already is closed down and I'm finished for the night. But I have to keep doing. Dear Michael, Presidio Pet Cemetery, says my friend Phil. Hundreds of pets, dogs, cats, birds, turtles, owned by the soldiers and officers and their kids, everyone with a little headstone. Example, Sergeant, a damn good dog. You get the idea. The love buried in that ground is greater than all the perversion in San Francisco. Best, Phil. Phil, you're right, man. God bless you. And Nancy Pelosi hasn't yet seized the Presidio to turn it into a private club?
Savage.
One of the great jazz pieces, A Night in Tunisia by Dizzy Gillespie. See, now that completely evokes in a person, in your imagination, A Night in Tunisia, doesn't it? You feel it. You can feel the whole thing. Whatever. Turn it off. Over the head. Got to play some jingoistic music to get a reaction. You're a great American. Well, you're a great American. Hello, how are you, sir? You're a great American. How come just for listening to, even though I graduated the eighth grade, I'm a great American. I read one book in my life. What do you want to talk about in the Savage Nation? Any topic? I already did the McCain thing. The guy is on the road to oblivion. That's all. I'll put it in a nice way. You want me to get literate? You want me to get PhD on you? He's on the road to oblivion. He's already apologizing. The other day, he apologized for using the middle name, or someone in his organization apologized to some schmuck from CNN who he could have wiped the floor up with if he had a brain. Today, he says, I never thought I was fated to be president. Just what the world needed to hear, John, the day after you won. Tell him you weren't fated to be president. What were you fated to run, an auto dealership? What are you talking like that for, man? Straighten up here. What do you mean you weren't fated? You got to lead the free world against the world of Islamofascism, but you're not fated for it. Oh, you were picked. Okay, so you're saying you're like Moses. I don't want it. I don't need it. I'm a flawed man. No, look, Moses, I'm sorry you picked. I got red hair. I got a hunch, a slight back already at my age. I got sciatica. God, please leave me alone. I don't want it. I got a migraine. My hemorrhoid acts up. I can't lead the people. I'm picking on you. But I'm short. I have a bad accent. I don't want to do this. That's why I'm picking on you. Picking you because you're not perfect. That's the story of Moses, because he was an imperfect person. God picked him. Maybe that's what McCain is playing. I don't really know. You know, maybe some talk, may believe you're Moses, that you never wanted it, you're the outsider. Who knows? You could be fooling me. I wouldn't know. You're going to lead the people out of the desert. I don't even want to be in the desert. I want to be in air conditioning in Brooklyn. Why am I here? Can't we move the clock forward like 5,000 years? I could be sitting in Sheepshead Bay on an air-conditioned boat or something. I don't want to lead the people out of the desert. No, I'm picking you, but I got red hair. I'm ugly, man. No one likes me. I'm like a bent-up guy here. What are you picking me? Look at pick him. Pick Arnold Schwarzenegger. He looks like a leader. Pick him with the pecs and the definition. He's got good delts and pecs. I'm like a Schmendrick here. What are you picking me for? I'm picking you, Moses, to lead the people, the Israelites, out of the desert, specifically because you're imperfect. And I only trust imperfect people, Moses. That's it's in my mind, like a certain thing in my head. Play A Night in Tunisia again for 1 minute. I'm starting to feel like I got over the peanut allergy from... Could anyone live with me? Is there a woman out there who could actually take this? Could you live with a man who's this hypersensitive? I'm like a combination composer, artist. How could you live with a person like this? I'm like, on every second, another thing to deal with. One problem after another, unless everything's perfect. Try going to dinner with me sometime. Turn that off now. Now I'm out of the mood. You know, a lot of people fantasize. Like, radio's beautiful. You can make anyone into anything, is what I love about it. So I don't like television. Because in television, your mind is on what you look like, rather than what you're saying. You're not using your brain 100% on what you're saying. A lot of it is on how you look. It's a tough medium. Don't get me wrong. I don't denigrate it. I don't like it. It's not for me. I had it for a while. I did okay with it. I probably could have been great at it. It was very stressful. I didn't like the lights. They hurt my eyes. I don't like having to get dressed up and spending as much time thinking about how does the tie look over. What am I going to say today? And when I'm in the flow here, I don't want to think about how my eye looks or my eye droopy or my ear. So the point I'm making is... Here I am on radio, and in radio, it's a medium of imagination. As a very bright man on radio said to me today, if I say to you, imagine me driving down the highway in a red car, one person will think I'm in a red Ferrari. The other person will imagine me in a red Ferrari. The next person will think I'm in a red Ford Pinto because you're using your imagination. Remember I told you I grew up in radio, that I actually am pre-television, sat in my father's lap. He smoked, Philip Morris, and we listened to radio. So I got to listen to radio. So my earliest media input was radio. And my dad would say to me, he'd say, listen to the radio, Michael. You have to imagine. Imagine, he would tell me. Use your imagination what the Green Hornet is doing. So I learned to imagine. I didn't have it put into me, you know, what I'm seeing, you know, through television or whatever, or movies. Even though I love both mediums, I love radio for that reason. I'm born for this. I am born for it. I'm a natural radio personality. Now, let's go into what I'm saying here. So many of you can imagine anything about any personality. In radio, you can imagine that, like, who I am, I'm this great guy, whatever. I have a great mind and I have a great vision, but I'm not a great person. I want you to understand that. So I get, like, letters like, you got to just take me on a word. I just got one from my lawyer from the defense fund. A guy offered me $10,000 if I go to dinner with him. Legitimate, upfront, I can't do it. I can't do it for a number of reasons. Straight up, I'm giving you the number. I'll publish the letter without his name if you think I'm inventing it. So what I'm getting at is a lot of people say, oh, man, I like to go to dinner with you. You're great. But it wouldn't be that great. Basically, it would start out with me not being comfortable in the seat they gave me in the restaurant. That's number one. It's like the Jackie Mason joke. I don't want to sit too close to the kitchen, but I don't want to eat too close to the door. That's how I am. I really am that way. I move tables. Like, I move hotel rooms, which is why I don't travel. I drove everyone in my family insane. They knew. They'd sit there. After the kids hit the age of 12, they would not even unpack in the first room. What they do is they put the suitcase down. I say, look, Dad, we'll be back in an hour. Give us a call. They knew it would be three rooms later till they actually could open up a bag. I get in a room. This was wrong. That was wrong. The view was wrong. There was a drip, a leak. There was a mold. There were two gay guys, and the bed was hitting the frame against the wall, I heard, with the ear, with the glass. I knew I wouldn't be able to sleep later that night. I had that once. I swear to God. It was in the Ritz-Carlton in Palm Beach. I complained about my room. It was noisy. Why was it noisy? Next to me were two men screaming as the bed was hitting against the... Why do they have to put the headboards walled back-to-back in a room? Who figured that out? Well, actually, you could figure it's quieter than if you put a television set next to the backboard of the other bed, you know. All right, so put the headboard, because most people who go to hotels are already past the phase of lovemaking. Little did they know there'd be a... But anyway, so my luck is I got two guys and screaming next to me. I got out of there as fast as I could. But this is what I'm talking about. Now go to dinner. So where I'm sitting, A, that's to start with. Now, B, if the server's off, I don't want him to touch my plate even. I don't want a guy with, like, lesions serving me. And I'm not talking about the French foreign lesion. In San Francisco, in other words, in order to get a job in a fancy restaurant, you need to have lesions in order to be diverse. You must have lesions on your hands and face in order to make people understand that they're diverse and they're good liberals, that they will take service from you even though you have open sores on your hand. Oh, no, that doesn't bother me. Well, put some pus on my salad. I absolutely, of course, better than a healthy person because I'm from San Francisco. So what I'm getting at is, do you really think you could live with me? I mean, a lot of people fantasize, like, oh, wow, you know. Wonder how many women fall in love with guys in the radio. You know, you think about it. Sometimes you do think about it. I got to admit it. Sometimes it goes through your mind. It's like actors. A lot of people, let's turn it around. Actresses. Whoa, man, look at her. Whew. Which she must be like, yeah, like a nightmare with high heels. 99% of them are insane. Okay, you want to marry an actress now? That's your fantasy, to marry some high-strung maniac who constantly thinks that she's ugly in front of a mirror? You know, she's revered as one of the most beautiful women. Do you really know beautiful women? They're like a wreck every second. I'm ugly. Look at me. Ugh! Every second. The more beautiful the woman, the uglier they think they are. You don't know that. I mean, these are secrets about the whole world, the human race. I know secrets. I know every corner of the human condition. I know every corner of the human condition. I know every curveball. I've shined flashlights into the darkest recesses of the human soul. I really have. It's horrible. But look, this is what they call wisdom. This is what passes for wisdom. And it is in a certain way. What is wisdom? It's a collection of it's a collective knowledge combined with the ability to express it properly instead of, I'm going to put my feet up in Crawford. and I'm leading the free world, and man, did I have a good time. All those wars and stuff. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Any topic is fair game. James, Leavenworth. Leavenworth, hey. James, what's on your mind, my friend?
Hey, I got a lot of issues. I listen to you all the time. But this Moses bit was killing.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. I made it up on the spot. I thought you'd enjoy it.
Oh, my old man was a Russian Jew that came to Leavenworth and adopted.
Wait. He came to Leavenworth, you mean as a prisoner or as a resident?
As an anesthesiologist out of the Air Force.
Oh, thank God. I didn't know what they brought him to Leavenworth for.
Oh, my. And all the Yiddish I used to hear all the time. I'd hear that every day. And I just enjoy listening to you because you bring back a lot.
So, in other words, my pantomime of Moses complaining to God, and why'd you pick me, you enjoyed.
Oh, certainly.
It may have happened that way for all we know. I mean, I don't think he projected like he wanted to live in an air-conditioned apartment in Sheepshead Bay 5,000 years from then. But I could imagine Moses must have said, why are you picking me? I think the Bible even says that God picked him because he was imperfect. Isn't that true?
Yeah, I'm very afraid that the analogy pertains to our next president, though. That's
oh, my God. I hope not. Hey, God bless you. Thanks for enjoying yourself. Sacramento, Covington's not a happy camper today. What's the problem, my friend?
It seems like you're always berating and criticizing black folks. We do no good. It could be, I mean, I first started, when you said the thing about Martin Luther King having a holiday, only real black holiday we have. You didn't like that.
Well, excuse me. No, I don't like it. Why should I like a day named for a man when George Washington's name and Lincoln's name were removed from a holiday, and the only man named is Martin Luther King Jr.? Wouldn't it be more equal for it to be called Civil Rights Day, my friend?
Well, it's possible, but I mean, I think I'm not down in that. I mean, I think they were great people too, but I just think that, you know, let us have a day. Come on now, one day.
All right, so we disagree on that. So you think that Michelle Obama saying America is just downright mean is not something that I should comment on?
Well, I think Michelle Obama is a strong woman. I think if she were our first lady, it would be beneficial to this country. But
I think she's a hateful, mean woman who should not get anywhere near the White House. I think she's a disaster. Why would you want a first lady who hates the country?
Well, first of all, I don't think Michelle Obama hates the country. I think
She just said we're a country, quote, that is just downright mean, close quote. I'm not making up those words. It's in the March 10th edition of The New Yorker. Doesn't that worry you to have a negativist like this who might be the first lady?
It doesn't necessarily worry me. It just lets me realize her reflection of the way it is in this country. It can be very difficult in the United States. That's not to say it's a horrible country. I still think it's the greatest country in the world, and I would bet she would agree. But
what is she complaining about? Well, what's she complaining about? Life is so bad for her? She's had a pampered, spoiled life, and she's making believe she's a sharecropper's daughter.
Well, she does live a very good life. I mean, she has a very good job, and, of course, her husband is a senator who is trying
to... Right, and because of her husband who's a senator, her pay increased from $121,000 in 2004 to $316,000 in 2005. That sounds like nepotism here. It sounds like something's wrong. Just after her husband was elected to the United States Senate, her pay went from $121,000 to $316,000. What if she were a Republican white woman? Would you be asking questions about that?
Probably. Probably.
Yeah, good. Well, you see, we're not so far off. For example, I'll give you another example on the white side. There's a bill pending where Pelosi's bill, put forward by the great Nancy Pelosi, could benefit her husband's stockholding because executives of the Thousand Oaks, California pharmaceutical firm Amgen, who contributed more than $20,000 to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's campaign, might benefit. The headline story is Pelosi's bill could benefit husband's stockholding. I have it up on michaelsavage.com, so don't think I'm picking on a race here. The fact of the matter is I don't like corruption of any kind.
Neither do I, but I think Michelle Obama's comments, pretty much, it's kind of refreshing to hear someone say some of the things, because a lot of people would think all that money she has and all that power would somehow insulate her, and she wouldn't be interested in concerns that maybe someone who's making a lot less would have.
Oh, come on. She says life is not good. I mean, she's not proud to be an American. Now she says we're a downright mean nation. Come on, man. You can't enjoy hearing that coming out of a woman who might be the first lady putting down her own country. She has a full-time housekeeper. She sees a personal trainer four times a week. She went to Princeton, I believe. And yet she's telling us this country is no good. I don't go for it, my friend. But Covington, thanks for listening so carefully and keeping me on my toes. That's what I appreciate in the Savage Nation. Okay. 1-800-449-8255. Niasha, K-N-E-W, San Francisco. What's on your mind, Niasha?
I live with you already. The reason my husband started listening to you was I heard you on the radio because somebody else we worked with listened to you. And I called him up and I said, honey, I swear I'm listening to you on the radio. And he's been listening to you ever since. I mean, he doesn't agree with you 100% on everything. But when you talk about now 80% of the things you talk about, he's in the house and he screams at the top of his lungs about the same things that you do. And if he talks about it today, tomorrow you'll be talking about it, or before the end of your show today you'll be talking about it. So I already live with you.
Well, what can I say? There's a lot of people who think the way I do. They're just not heard from in this country. That seems to be the problem, and it explains the popularity of this show. It's not that I'm saying things that are so unique. Yes, the way I put it is unique. But what I'm actually saying is not that unique. It reflects the minds of millions and millions of Americans who have been shut out of the political process. Thank you for the call. That's exactly true. Why do you think we're disenchanted with the Republican Party and disenchanted with John McCain, John McShame? I'll be right back.
Savage.
Savage Nation. We're going to take some callers. I'm going to read the articles on michaelsavage.com. Already Friday, my lawyer goes before the judge on the CAIR trying to get me off the air case. So there's almost 25,000 of you have made a contribution to my defense fund. I cannot thank each of you individually, but a thank you, thank you, thank you. It's because of you that we're willing to fight this as far as we have to. The judge, I don't know. But she was appointed by Bill Clinton, so I'm not optimistic. I'll be very honest with you. It's San Francisco. It's a federal judge, okay? And if I don't prevail, I'm going to appeal this, and I'm going to need your help right to the end. I'll take it to the Supreme Court. I'm not leaving radio, and I'm going to expose them for who they are. It's as simple as that. If you think I'm going to roll over to an Islamist front group, you are mistaken. Salt Lake City, Utah. Dan, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Mike. You've had a great week. I've just been captivated and listening to the last 12 hours, or we're going to be on 12 hours. I was feeling down this week, you know, coming in this week. But this week you just re-inspired me. Things are going well.
Why do you feel encouraged this week? What happened that encouraged you? It's interesting you should say that. I also feel encouraged, and I think it's political.
But what
is it that's encouraging you?
Well, I felt like we were dead end. We had no opportunity, you know, no candidates that reflected us. But it doesn't matter who's at the top; it's at the bottom.
Yeah, to a great extent, it's true. But a fish rots from the head down, as we all know, and a rotten head can destroy an awful lot of the fish's body. McCain's acceptance speech last night was remarkable in that he actually mentioned Islamic terrorism. I don't think you – did you hear it at all?
I did. I was listening, yes.
Now, I'll tell you the truth. I like Cindy McCain. I think she's absolutely the best choice for First Lady. She's like another Jackie Kennedy. And if I have to be the first one in the media to say it, so be it. I am the first to say it. She'd make a perfect First Lady. She'd bring dignity back to the White House. She's not only beautiful, but her poise – and her quiet support for her husband is perfect. She's just what we need right now. And McCain showed some fire that I didn't think was left in him, and he also hit the right notes. However, if he continues to – not however. He must stay on that road. He must continue to show leadership. He must now start to appeal to the base, or he's going to go by the way of Giuliani. He cannot continue to avoid you and the others who listen to other shows and talk radio. He will not get where he wants to go. He will be marginalized by the media to begin with, and if he doesn't turn to his friends, he's going to have no which way to turn.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Talked to a lot of people in Ohio who said there really isn't that significant a difference between you two, and they'd like to see you both on the ticket.
Well, that may be where this is headed, but of course we have to decide who's on the top of the ticket. And I think that the people of Ohio very clearly said that it should be me. And after all, no one in recent history has won the presidency who did not win their party's primary in Ohio.
So why does the media continue to position Obama as the front runner? Here's Michael Savage's analysis.
Well, let's pause right here, because I predicted a Hillary Obama ticket on January 25th, 2007, not 2008. Now play Okie, Finokie, Muskogee, and we'll kick off this hour on the Savage Nation. Marijuana in Muskogee. We don't take our trips on LSD. Sing along, follow the bouncing joint.
We don't burn
our draft cards down on Main Street. We like living right and being free.
We don't make a party out of loving.
God, it's innocent compared to today. God.
But we like holding hands and pitching woo.
I don't know what pitching woo is, but whatever.
We don't let our hair go long and shaggy.
Shaggy.
Like the hippies
out in San Francisco do. Here it goes.
Proud to be an Okie from Muskogee.
What a song. It's America, America. America's not Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. That's not America. That's the America of the little screen, of the sickos, the wackos, the twistos. This is America. By the way, these people haven't been heard from yet. America hasn't voted, incidentally.
All
right, turn it. See what I'm getting at? The election's November 7th, 2008. All this garbage you're seeing is meant to boost up Obama and Hillary and diminish John McCain, because the whack jobs in the media hate anything except Bolshevism. You understand what I'm saying to you? Their idea of a hero would be Fidel Castro. Make no mistake about it. They're sick in the head. They hate the country that gives them their own sustenance. They hate everything about this country. They'd love to see a revolution. That's what they really want. And the American people know that the media is twisted. They know the media is biased. They hate them. They despise them. They know that they're biased against John McCain. As flawed a man as he is, frankly, he's 100 times better than the two of them put together, as far as I'm concerned. And the fact of the matter is, America hasn't voted yet. America has not gone to the polls. This is a disgrace. It's a darn disgrace. Running an election for two straight years simply to promote the Democrats. And the American people have had enough of this chicanery by the pollsters and the media and the Democrat politicians. I can guarantee you that when the election comes in November, assuming they don't destroy John McCain along the way, and assume he doesn't crack up or, God forbid, get injured, if it's a McCain-Colin Powell ticket, which I'm praying for and I hope they listen to me, he wins by 35 points. It's over. If it's a McCain-Romney ticket, they win by 10 to 15 points. It's over. And if McCain makes the idiotic move of picking some liberal, he's not winning at all. Moreover, if McCain continues to avoid his base, his core, and continue to pander to every other group, he's finished. And if McCain continues to apologize, he's finished. And if McCain doesn't fire his advisors, he's finished. I can sing you the chorus right now. 1-800-449-8255. Here are the headlines on MichaelSavage.com. Top left. That America-hating Mrs. Obama, what a last lady she would make. It's up there. Read it. On the right, Bush gives McCain the Frito kiss. Now, why do I say that? When Bush endorses John McCain, you think that's good for John McCain? I don't. I think it's a disaster. And I think McCain's advisor should be thrown out. And I hope somebody's listening to me in the McCain camp. George Bush, may God bless his soul, is one of the most unpopular presidents in history, and he's currently the president. And the reason Hillary and Obama are even up there is because of George Bush. For John McCain to go there and get the Frito kiss is unbelievable to me. Listen to this. Listen to George Bush giving him the Frito job.
If he wants my pretty face standing by his side at one of these rallies, I'll be glad to show up. But they're not. They're going to be looking at him. You know, I'm going to be in Crawford with my feet up. He's going to be sitting in there behind that desk making the decisions on war and peace. And I'm thankful our party has nominated somebody plenty capable of making those decisions.
Plenty capable? Me, Tarzan, you, Jane? I mean, hello? I mean, I've heard of the misuse of language. It's astounding. First of all, he reminded everybody that John McCain is wed to him politically, and he's like him. That's great, just what John McCain needed right now. Our party. Again, the Republican Party is absolutely in disrepair. He couldn't make believe John McCain was somewhat independent of the Republican Party, our party. McCain's trying to position himself as an independent. Now, Bush reminds everybody that not only they know each other for 500 years, but they're blood brothers and they're all in the same party. Great job. Thanks for giving him the kiss of Underneath that story on my website, same-sex marriage has skeptics on California Supreme Court. Great article. You want to talk about a misstep? Not only has McCain made several missteps, but Obama made a big misstep. For Obama to come out over the last few days and say that Jesus' Sermon on the Mount tells him that homosexual marriage is okay is one of the greatest missteps of this campaign. Phenomenal misstep. Why did he bring up a homosexual marriage in the middle of a campaign as contested as this one is? Why would he do that? Well, is that partially the reason that Hillary moved ahead of him? Is that one of the reasons that no one's asking because the media is all controlled by folks who are friendly to that particular death style? It's possible because it was a disastrous misstep. And the question is, why did Obama bring it up at all? Here's my theory. I told you before that the people who kicked off Obama's campaign with the largest amount of money right up front were the homosexual giants in Hollywood. They're not hiding it. They're out about it. They're up front about it. They gave him a giant amount of money, millions, when he had nothing. And he was their guy to push their agenda. And the only thing on their mind is homosexual marriage for reasons I'll never understand. To this day, I'll never understand why that's so important to people who are practicing that particular kind of sexuality. I'll never comprehend why they would want that. Never in a million years do I understand that. But I will put aside my inability to comprehend why somebody would want to pervert marriage so much that they would back a candidate strictly for that reason. So they probably went to him. Where did he get the $35 million all of a sudden between last week or whatever and this week? They probably went to him and said, look, we'll kick in a lot more money, but you got to push the agenda and make it a point next week. And he did so. He punted that ball forward on the field for homosexual marriage. I'll be right back. The socialist, internationalist, liberal media tells us nothing but bad news about Iraq. But a recent report from Rowan Scarborough shows us that al-Qaeda is actually much weaker than we've been led to believe. He's here to talk about it. Rowan, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello, Michael. Good to be with you again.
Your recent article from Insight talks about a faltering al-Qaeda in Iraq due to the surge under General Petraeus. Where are we getting this information?
It's some of the best information that our commanders in Iraq can get. It comes right from the terrorists themselves, and it's not in any written journals. It's not interrogating them after they're imprisoned, where some of the stuff they say might be suspect. This is their words uttered on cell phones and in emails to each other, that we are, that through our new technologies, we are able to intercept and translate and get to commanders very quickly. And it shows that Al-Qaeda themselves are saying they're in horrible shape, that U.S. forces and Iraqi forces are killing them by the score, that they're being disrupted from their operation centers in Baghdad and in Diyala province and are being forced to move north, and that they're running out of people. So I think it's one of the best pieces of evidence that our commanders have, that the surge is working against Al-Qaeda in Iraq, and that they're on the run, and that they're, and that we're winning. We haven't won yet in our battle with Al-Qaeda in Iraq, but the intercepts show that we are winning.
This system that we're using to get this info, is it something new?
Well, it's relatively new in the sense that we have built up, with a lot of investments in technology and in manpower, they have built up in Iraq a very complex system of being an integrated system of being able to intercept communications. It's done on the tactical level with special operations forces, and then it's done on more of the strategic level where the National Security Agency is able to penetrate these cell phone networks. And then tactically, when troops are able to capture cell phones or able to download information that give them cell phone numbers of suspected terrorists, we're able to program that into computers and then listen for when those numbers are called and listen to the conversation. So it's a lot better. We've been trying to intercept communications all along, but it's just gotten a lot better as time has gone on. And now the people that I speak with tell me that we've really got the place wired. And it's difficult for Al-Qaeda to talk to each other in Iraq without us being able to hone in on the people we want to listen to. And this is why modernizing FISA, the law that regulates listening in on phone calls of American citizens, it's so important the commanders feel to update this law to match the technology today of the Internet and cell phones, because that law was written basically when you had to penetrate a landline and then listen to a call. What we have today now with the Internet is you have terrorists who will get an American server. They'll get Google or they'll get AOL. And if we don't know the identity of the person using that server, the assumption is that they're an American person. And as an American person, they're covered over under FISA, which means commanders in Iraq or troops in Iraq have to fill out paperwork and submit it to the NSA, and they submit it to the Justice Department to show that there's probable cause that we should intercept this email. Well, under the new law, which the Democrats in the House have blocked, it's streamlined to where the head of the National Intelligence Service can okay the request very, very quickly, and they can go to the email server and look at these emails. And in this time of war, when you need to make very, very quick decisions on going after Al-Qaeda, that's why this law, in the view of commanders in Iraq, needs to be modernized.
So holding up the new wiretapping law can have an effect on the war itself?
There is no doubt, because we have come across emails in Iraq that we suspect are terrorists, but they have an American server. They have a Google server or an AOL server or Yahoo. So we have to assume, to comply with the law, that they're an American person, which means they're covered by FISA, and you have to do the paperwork to try to show probable cause that they're a terrorist. With under the new law that the Democrats are blocking in the House, you don't have to go through all that paperwork. And I can tell you, we know that when we were hunting soldiers in southern Iraq who had been kidnapped, this was one of the bureaucratic snags that the military and the NSA had to go through. They had to fill out paperwork to monitor some emails that they wanted to target. So the FISA needs to be modernized to keep up with cell phones and the Internet, both of which were not around when the law was written 30 years ago.
Doesn't the NSA have an office specifically dealing with this type of information gathering?
Yeah, they do. They have set up procedures where they can – well, the NSA's job is to intercept communications. I mean, that's what they do. They break codes. And they have an office that now that deals with FISA. But the point is, though, it's bureaucratic. You still have to go to the Justice Department and make your case because they're the ones that eventually have to go to a panel of judges or a judge and say, hey, we did this, and we want you to prove it after the fact, and we had good reason. Under the modernization – they will not have to do that, and that's the key point. They skip a lot of the bureaucracy, and they go right into the email or right to the cell phone because a lot of these email and cell phones, although the calls are between people in Iraq, they are routed through our country. And when they're routed through our country, the FISA law is triggered.
Do we have other evidence on weakening al-Qaeda in Iraq besides email and cell phone conversations?
Besides these intercepts, there is another body of evidence that al-Qaeda has been greatly damaged in Iraq. In November, we were able to capture a diary written by a leader in northern Iraq and a memo written by an al-Qaeda leader in al-Anbar. And in both of those documents, they were bemoaning the sorry state of al-Qaeda in their area and all the problems they were having. And so these intercepted calls are more contemporaneous. Instead of being 3 or 4 months old, you know, they're happening within recent days and recent weeks. And so it's a great body of evidence taken together to show that we've done a lot of damage to al-Qaeda. And also my sources tell me that it's becoming more and more difficult for them to recruit the suicide bombers, and that, after all, that's their number one weapon, al-Qaeda, to put a bomb on someone and send them into a market. And this bombing campaign that they've been on in al-Qaeda has revealed al-Qaeda to be basically murder incorporated, and the Arab world sees this, and they are more reluctant to go into Iraq and kill people. And that's why they've had to turn to, in one case, the two mentally retarded women. In another case, there is video of them training boys to be operatives in their organization. So al-Qaeda is being killed off in Iraq, and it's having trouble replenishing its numbers.
Well, these two examples show not only their horrible barbarism, but their desperation as well.
Exactly. I mean, if you have to resort to retarded women, and if you have to resort to training boys to be your next cadre of consumer suicide bombers, then you're desperate. I mean, you're running out of recruiting Islamists from Saudi Arabia and North Africa, where most of them have come from. You're having trouble doing that, so you're turning to sort of like what during the Civil War when the Confederacy had to start turning to 11-year-olds to go into the battlefield. You're hurting. And so this is more evidence, and it's probably a good argument for Republicans as why this is not the time to pull out of Iraq. If anything, this is the time to press and get it done with once and for all.
Global warming, my God, the coldest winter on record. Yet the global warming liars continue marching towards the control of every aspect of your life using false claims of man-induced climate change. That's their weapon. But there are some in government who are standing up to them. Senator James Inhofe, Republican of Oklahoma, has long been a strong voice of science against these eco-nuts. And he's here with us now to talk about this real battle. Senator Inhofe, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael, I appreciate being on your program again. It's been a while since we have. It's always a privilege to be on your program.
Senator, there was a meeting this week in New York City that you were involved with of scientists, policymakers, and others who are skeptical about the claims of the global warming hucksters. Who was there and what were they discussing?
Well, you know, they had a lot of scientists there, scientists whose credentials cannot be questioned. And I can start naming them, but just they're all gathered together. And I think this is the first time that we've actually had a conference. And I didn't have the conference. Frankly, I wasn't there. I had some staff who was there, but I didn't personally attend. But this is the first time that they've gotten together a bunch of scientists and talked about, you know, what's the reality of global warming. And for our listeners' benefit, Michael, I'd like to make sure they understand what the real issue is. The issue is not global warming. The issue is is man-made gases, they call them anthropogenic gases, or CO2 or methane, are they contributing in a large way to climate change becoming warmer? Now, that's the big issue, and a lot of people don't understand what that is. Science has always been mixed. I actually gave a 2.5-hour speech on 3 different occasions on the floor of the United States Senate. And on this, I went into all kinds of details in the history of what the science was and what it was not. Let's keep in mind, it was all started by the United Nations. Now, that should tip you off a little bit as to some of the problems with this. The United Nations IPCC came out and said that man is the culprit. And then we all kind of agreed that that must be the case. Let me tell you, Michael, I became the chairman of the Environment and Public Works Committee 5 years ago. That's when the Republicans were in control of the United States Senate. Now, I've been replaced as of a year ago by Barbara Boxer, since the Democrats are in control. But back then, that was when everyone was talking about global warming, and it was due to man-made gases, primarily CO2. I assumed that that was true until the Wharton School of Economics came out with the Wharton Econometric Survey. And when they did this, they said that the cost of this would be huge, and they gave the range of $300 to $330 billion. Well, then I happened to think, wait a minute, that's just an awful lot of money. If you want to get an idea of what this stuff would cost, these cap-and-trade schemes that they are promoting, think back, as Michael, you remember very well, back in 1993 when they had the Clinton-Gore tax increase. I remember going down to the floor of the Senate and complaining about it, or the House, I guess. I was in the House at that time, and talking about that was the largest tax increase in 2 decades. And it was where they raised the marginal rates, raised the inheritance tax, raised the gasoline tax, and it was huge. That was a $32 billion tax increase. This would be a tax increase 10 times greater. So if that was costing each family about $300 a year, then it would be up to about $3,000. Now, that's a little background, a little history. That was back when we were talking about signing on and ratifying the Kyoto Treaty. What we're considering today is not that. It's a bill that was passed out of the Environment and Public Works Committee. It will be considered on the floor of the United States Senate, called the Lieberman-Warner Bill. This bill has had an analysis by Charles Rivers Associates and by several other groups that say this is far greater of a cost, far greater of a tax increase than the signing on to the Kyoto and living by its emissions would have been. So instead of being $330 billion, it's $417 billion. That is just huge. Well, when we found out how much it was going to cost, I started looking at the science only to find out that there are so many scientists out there that are just hysterical about this thing. They say it has nothing to do or very little to do with man-made gases. Instead, we've gone through these cycles year after year, century after century, and we've plotted this, and people know that this is due to a lot of different things, but certainly man's contribution is not very great. So what we're looking at is this. There is confused science at best, and I'd be glad to name the scientists and go over as I have in the past. I would invite your listeners to look up my website, which is epw.senate.gov. EPW, that's Environment and Public Works Committee. epw.senate.gov. And my name is Inhofe. So as soon as you get on that website, turn to Inhofe. And if any of our listeners out there have insomnia, they can read some of my 2.5-hour speeches because they're all there and they're all documented. Michael, I don't think I've ever heard you say it this way, but one thing about conservatives, we have to have documentation. The liberals don't have to have it, but we do. And so if you look at my website, you'll see all of that that's documented. So I'm just glad there is a group up there of scientists getting together to try to get across to the people the real truth. The movie that Al Gore had, almost every frame in that movie has been refuted scientifically over the past few years. So I think that people now need to look at the changing scene. We have one of three people is going to be president of the United States. All three of them have embraced the idea that man-made gases have a lot to do with global warming. And so I think the emphasis will shift now in that instead of saying, well, we're just not going to pass a bill like the Lieberman-Warner bill, instead of that, we will pass something where we share technology with the developing world, China, India, and other countries like that. Because let's, you know, use logic. If you stop and think about it, if we refuse to build any more generating plants, and we've only built about 12 in the last 15 years, China is building one every 3 days. That means that as we lose our jobs here, because people have to have energy, they'll be going to places like China. China has no emission restrictions. And so consequently, it would be worse to pass a bill to drive the industry off of our soil into the third world than it would be for us to share technology with these countries and let them come to the table and absorb part of the cost of doing this.
According to recent temperature studies, there has been significant global cooling. Why hasn't this been reported more extensively by the left-wing psychobabblers in the major media?
Yeah, there has been. Your networks are not going to do it. CNN's not going to do it. Talk radio will do it, and Fox will do it. And that's kind of where it's where it divides out. Yeah, what you're talking about, Michael, is there have been several scientists who have said we haven't had a warming since about the year 2000. And the evidence is it's actually going into a cooling spell. Let's keep one other thing in mind that I think is important. The very people who are hysterical out there right now that the world's coming to an end and we're going through global warming, it's dirty old man that caused it. Those same ones, I remember because I was in the state Senate back in the 1970s, they were saying we're going into another ice age. And so, and these are the same people. And so if there's not hysteria, then they're not happy.
Well, what does the global warming industry have to say about this record-breaking cold winter? Where are they, vacationing somewhere in the heat?
Oh, it is kind of humorous because in my state of Oklahoma, we set records up in all the way throughout the United States. There are records set, and it's that much colder. But when you talk to these people, they say, "Oh, well, that's because of global warming too." I've never quite understood it. It's interesting. In fact, Al Gore was making a speech in New York City, and they had to call it off because it was so cold, and they had set a record that day. This had been quite a while ago, but anyway, I think the thing that rational people have to realize is that the science is mixed. There are some scientists who believe it, some who do not. There is absolutely no consensus, and that was one of the reasons for this meeting that took place in New York City, to get all the scientists together in one place where they could refute some of these claims. And I believe that's what's happening. But the thing that we need to talk about, that I will be talking about, is how much this is going to cost my 20 kids and grandkids for the years to come. And we're talking about not billions, but trillions of dollars. In fact, one of the estimates came out during this, the CRA said it would be between $4 and $6 trillion in welfare costs over 40 years. And that's huge.
Senator, as the ranking Republican on the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee, what's the most frustrating thing about listening to global warming proponents such as the cuckoo bird, Barbara Boxer?
Well, the frustrating thing is that they won't look at the science. They keep trying to say it louder and louder. The science is settled. The science is settled. The science is settled. But they won't elaborate. That's all they'll do. And so they won't consider the science. We've had about 25 hearings on this subject. Of course, it's all biased in terms of the witnesses there. But again, you know, when you show and actually quote people, you'd think that they would at least listen, because we're talking about such huge economic impact on our country that I think it's really it is frustrating. But that's the way that committee's been. I have to say this. When I was chairman, we had a majority of Republicans on the committee, but it wasn't that much better because one of my Republicans was Lincoln Chafee from Rhode Island, who voted with the Democrats. So I've never really had a majority of people who will look at things in a balanced way on that committee. Now, it's passed out of the committee, so I think what people need to do is to communicate with their members of the Senate, not the House, the Senate, and talk to them about, you know, the information that they pull off my website on what it's going to cost them and their constituents. That's the only way that we're going to get any kind of rational treatment of this subject.
Senator Inhofe, in the last week we've seen another outbreak of violence by eco-terrorist groups. What has your history been in protecting America from these environmental fascists?
You're right, Michael. In Washington State, there was a horrible thing that happened just a few days ago. It was a terrorist act. The burning of new construction. And the interesting thing about this is that back when I was the chairman of the committee, we had several hearings on what we call eco-terrorism. These are the animal rights extremist groups. These are the ELF and ALF, that's the Earth Liberation Front and the Animal Liberation Front. They're extremist groups, and they brag about the fact that they are bombing construction sites. They are burning new construction. Now, fortunately, no one has been killed yet, but millions and millions of dollars in damages have taken place. The Justice Department, the FBI, and Homeland Security all have the Earth Liberation Front and the Animal Liberation Front as the number one domestic terrorist threat to the United States. That's over the likes of the Ku Klux Klan and the Aryan Nation and some of these other groups. So it is real. Well, consequently, we had some hearings and passed a law that allows them to expands our criminal prohibitions against the use of force, violence, and threats involving animal enterprises and other things. And consequently, as a result of that law that passed, that will now can now be used to gather information on this disaster that took place last week, because they're going to be able to go through and do what they have to do to get information that was not they were not able to do before. And it also provides for a death penalty in the case of a death that takes place in one of these attacks. So there's a real serious problem closely related. We're talking about environmental extremists, and I've always contended that they don't really care about the environment. They are just extremists. I'll lose my credibility with some of your listeners, Michael, when I tell you this. We had a hearing when I was chairman of on a group called SHAC. I can't remember what it stands for, but it's an animal rights group. It's headed up by a guy named Dr. Jerry Vlasic. We found out when he was in our hearing, and this is all televised on C-SPAN, that he had been trying to recruit people from colleges. And here's a statement that he made. Now, listen carefully, because this is a quote. He said, "I don't think that you'd have to assassinate too many people before you would see a marked decrease in the amount of vivisection going on." He's talking about some. He said, "I think for the 5 lives, 10 lives, 15 lives, human lives, we could save a million, 2 million, or 10 million non-human lives." So he's talking about advocating killing people who experiment with animals. And when I pressed him on this, he said, the lives of animals and people are a moral equivalent. So this is the type of people that we're dealing with. And yes, they are extremists.
Senator Inhofe, it's been a pleasure. Keep up the good fight. And you can call on me, Michael Savage, anytime on the Savage Nation.
Michael, thanks so much for having me on. When you're around Washington and you talk to the people with the Washington mentality up here, sometimes you just have to breathe deep and talk to normal people. So it's been good therapy for me, and I appreciate you. You're doing the Lord's work.
Savage.
A lot of hungry ears listen here. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. Yes, indeedy, a lot of hungry ears listen here. So here are some of the headlines on my website, michaelsavage.com. That America-hating Mrs. Obama, what a last lady she would make. Read it and see what you think. On the right side, Bush gives McCain the Frito kiss. Beneath that, here's a headline, same-sex marriage has skeptics on California Supreme Court. Yeah, right. Obama's real Mideast problem. Great article. Take a look at it. If you think I'm biased, how about the next one? Pelosi's bill could benefit her husband's stockholding. Aren't you sick and tired of nepotism? How do they get away with it? How does Feinstein get away with affronting for a husband? How do they get away with it, people are asking? Well, I'll let you figure it out. Beneath that is another story that's local but has national implications. Local talk show host who you never heard of named Bernie Ward, according to the article, violated bail and lied to the feds. That's right. The San Francisco radio host facing child porn charges lied to federal officials about his whereabouts, according to the Smoking Gun. It's right up on michaelsavage.com. GOP senators to introduce toughest yet immigration package. Yeah, right. CBS pushes homosexual agenda openly. Family programs dead and sneered at by CBS. I can tell you what the acronym CBS stands for, but I'll let you fill in the blanks. Give me a C. Give me a B. Give me an S and fill in the blanks. Debunking global warming. Where's Al Gore? Nowhere to be found because it's the coldest winter on record for a very long period of time anyway. And since it's so cold and so icy and planes need to be de-iced, why Al Gore's in hiding? Find Waldo. Qatar, or gutter, depending upon your pronunciation, that's a country named Q-A-T-A-R, gutter some call it, guitar some call it, Qatar some call it. Well, anyway, they're bankrolling Hamas. They're good friends of the administration. They've had virtually all the U.S. senators and congressmen over there on junkets, but they're funding Hamas. Listen to me, my friends, it's worse than you think. Arizona weighs bill to allow guns on campuses. That's right. Let me repeat that. Arizona is weighing a bill to allow guns on campuses in order to give children on the campuses a chance to fight back against the increasing number of drug-crazed madmen. You see, it's not the guns that are killing. It's the drugs, stupid. It's Prozac, the most dangerous drug ever invented. And you mark my words, mark down the day I said it because this isn't the first day. Just as the colostomy bag was once seen as a trend in England. And did you know that the colostomy was seen as an elective procedure in England, in Victorian England? Many, many, many wealthy English did not like the idea that they had to go to the bathroom. They didn't like it. They had bowels. And they thought it was disgusting that they had to do what their dogs and cats did. So they opted for the colostomy bag, even though they'd had no disease, because they thought it was cleaner to put it. And you follow the story? Well, of course, that's crazy looking back. Many medical procedures are fads, and so are many drugs. Thalidomide was once seen as a tranquilizer. It caused birth defects. Prozac is seen as a wonderful treatment, even though it's seen to be of no effect whatsoever in some studies. I have told you it's related in almost every case to these gun mad cases. These kids are either on or off drugs, and so are the shooters. And the drugs are usually Prozac related. One day they will be banned when we get ourselves free of congressmen and senators who are owned by the drug lobby. That's my opinion. And so it's the drug, stupid, not the guns. And as I've told you many times, when I was in high school, New York City, Jamaica, Queens, I was on the rifle team. Guess what? Nobody ever turned the gun around and killed anybody. Nobody ever turned the gun around and shot themselves. Nobody was on drugs. You hear what I just said? Guns don't kill. Drugs kill. This is the Savage Nation. Read the website. Read the stories. Listen to the show. 1-800-449-8255 every day. MichaelSavage.com every night. And, of course, it's not me. It's with God's will and your listenership that I do return. So let's thank God for great favors.
Savage.